Are you ready to shake out those family trees?
Wow.
Yes.
It's Linda and Gina.
Linda and Gina.
On the Twice Removed podcast.
Hey, everybody. It's time for our favorite podcast and hopefully your favorite podcast, Twice Removed. And guess what? Speaking of twice, Linda Anderson over there. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
And Gina Glass. Speaking of twice, this is our second season, our first show of our second season. So we did it. We made it to a second season.
Yay.
Yay.
There's always something to talk about with genealogy, so this could go on forever.
Oh, boy. Hear that, everyone? Buckle up. Here we go. So yeah. Today we're going to talk about how to be a mystery cousins advocate in the case of adoption or NPE.
An NPE is a non-parental event or a not parent expected. So it's like when you get a DNA test and you're looking for your dad and some other guy comes up as your father, or a bunch of cousins that or siblings that is like, wait, who are these people? And it's a surprise.
Pick up your jaw up off the floor.
Yeah.
Get back up off the floor.
And go for therapy. Literally go for therapy afterwards.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's probably necessary in some cases. Some people are just not knowing how to handle that. I don't think I would.
I don't know what I would do.
Yeah. Especially when, you know, kids are younger and...
Although I've tried to sell my mom on occasion now, and she is mine through DNA, so who knows? No, but yeah, I don't think I'd know what to do on that one.
I remember I found something once. It was like one of those obituary cards that has Jesus on the front in the the 23rd Psalm and all that, and it was the same name as my mother's maiden name, and I'm like, who is this woman pretending to be my mother? It was her mother's sister who she was named after and married into her father's side of the family. So she had the same name, but she wasn't the only one with that name because there was another person on the father's side that also was a sister that had that name too. So it could have been either one of them, but it was the one. And it's like, I was really upset about it for, you know, like the rest of the day. I was probably like 9 or something, 10 maybe. It's like, first of all, what are you going through my stuff for? It was in the Bible. You should be glad I was looking. So I got out of it that way.
I'll say amen. Gosh, wow.
Yeah. So what happens is, like, if you find somebody on your own and you're, you know, you just hit them up and want to know, hey, I'm just curiously wondering how you may be related to me, because we share an awful lot of DNA here and I can't figure out where you are on my family tree.
Yeah.
So, and then they reach out to you again, hopefully, and say, oh, I'm adopted. Oh.
I hope.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes the other way around is if they're an NPE, perhaps, or even an adopted person who's really actively trying to find their family or their bio family, you know, they may be contacting you. And a lot of times they don't answer, or people don't answer when they're contacted in the other way.
Yeah, that sucks when you find a close relative, half sibling or whatever, and you reach out and they don't answer back. And it's sad because it's like, well, here you are doing your DNA for some reason. And
they did too for some reason.
Yeah, exactly. And here they are and they don't answer you back. And nobody did anything wrong. Nobody's at fault as far as the offsprings are concerned. So you should reach out. But don't you feel like if you tell them that you should help them? I mean, don't you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would personally.
I think so.
Come up, you know, try to help anybody who's trying to figure out how they fit on the tree, because they may just be, you know, older and they didn't have any of the documents or anything and they don't know how they're related. Maybe the parents moved from another country and they didn't really stay in touch with their family in the other country. So they may not know who their second or third cousins are that start popping up. Even in that case, you should help them. But for somebody who's adopted or an NPE situation, and you help them, you know, just let them lead the charge and ask for your help, and then you just help where you can do it, you know.
Yeah, I think that's important to let them lead, absolutely, because you have to go at their pace, even though you might know something more than they do or whatever. You have to abide by everybody's wishes too.
Yeah.
And it's hard because it's like, oh, here's a new family member and they're cool and enjoying them and all that. And here your cousin down the road might be like, you know, in a closet biting their nails going, don't say anything.
Well, so, if they were adopted and they've known it for quite a while and they've had a great life and they just are curious, then, you know, you can go full tilt and try to help them with as much as you can and just send them stuff and see what happens. But with somebody when it's, you know, fairly new and like a fresh wound or whatever, that's when you just should really be super careful with them, I think, just for their emotional state and whatever. Because you just have no idea what's going on in their mind. Could you just imagine? You know, so you have to put yourself in their place.
Okay, so if they already knew who their birth parent was and they're reaching out to you, what do you do? How would you handle this?
Well, do I know them? Do I know the birth parent enough, well enough to contact them? I might be able to say, yeah, I think the last time I heard where they're living is in whatever town, USA or wherever. And maybe you could start there, but I don't even know if I could make an introduction. You know, you don't necessarily have people's cell phone numbers if you haven't been in touch with them for over 20 years. You don't necessarily know if they've moved from the address your mother had in her address book.
Well, I guess it always comes back to that too. Do they want to be found or not? I mean, I've known folks that put, you know, they've had to give their kid up for whatever reason and they put on there, no. And I have a friend from high school that got pregnant at 16 and she wanted to be able to see her daughter when she turned 18, that she could do that. And they have a great relationship. So, I you know, it's just that catch 22 thingy there.
Well, the first thing to do, I guess, is to find out what state they were born in. Because if it was California, you really can't find out unless it's, I don't know what the circumstances would have to be, you know. That's something really special. If it's New York State, you can.
Oh, see? So each state varies.
Yeah, there's different degrees of what you're allowed to see. Because you can still see some things. And, you know, like if somebody showed me the description of a certain person's parents and the one that's on my side of the family, I might be able to figure out who it is.
Yeah.
You know, if it's closed, like in California.
Well, and that goes back to doing all your DNA tests on the different sites, because, you know, I would definitely always do Ancestry only because that was the first one. So everybody kind of rushed to it.
And they have the largest database.
Yeah. And when like 23andMe or MyHeritage or one of those came along, people might have passed, or people might have said, you know what, it's already up at Ancestry, I don't need to do this one. So I think that that's probably the wisest move, is to try to.
And what's really kind of sad is I know that this has happened, because when people don't respond and you can tell that they haven't been active for a while, that their kids or somebody may have said, hey, you know, why don't you go ahead and have your DNA done so that we have it, and then they'd pass away. You know, because I know that there's some on there that were born in like 1918. It's like, I don't think you're probably around anymore. And I'm not going to try to contact you, even though you're like really super close to high share with me, because they're older and it's not as diluted. Like they weren't born in 2000. They were born in 1918. So you have like 100 years worth more of DNA to share with them.
And folks, if you're managing those people's DNA, put deceased. I mean, because I have some that I see of my cousins and I know they're passed away and they're still inactive. Send them a message. And unless they need to tell something from beyond and they can do that, then okay. But
wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, wouldn't it? But if not, just, you know, help everyone out. Help everyone out and put a little note there.
Yeah. I don't know what I would do if somebody asked me to go reach out, though.
I'd ask. Our family is kind of open that way, but yeah. You know, if somebody was deceased and their wish was not to say anything, that's, I think, the hardest. If there's other relatives there, you know, an aunt, uncle, or cousin, why the heck not? And that and the mother or father has passed away, why the heck not?
I think it's different on the level of cousinhood, too, because if it was somebody who is the child of my first cousin, which they're all in Germany, so it wouldn't happen, you know, because they don't really test.
If you had a half sibling by doing this, would you want to know them, or would you be
like, of course.
Ah, see, that's it.
Yeah, of course I would. But as far as like trying to find the parent for them, first cousin, I would probably... You know, I would say, well, I kind of can tell you who I think it might be, you know, out of the list, because there's only, you know, and then I would contact them. But, you know, I don't, my first cousins aren't like that.
But if they asked not to be found and you knew who it was, would you still say? And they were passed?
If they'd passed, I don't see, you know, what's the difference?
Right.
You know, this was your father. I knew him sort of. From many trips that I took to Germany, and he was great. And, you know, here's some pictures of him when he was a kid. That's what I would do.
I agree.
Yeah. But if they're still alive, I would reach out to him because I have a close enough relationship with them, even though we haven't seen each other in a long time. My first cousins are, you know, that's different. We knew each other as little kids.
Right.
And I think we could do that. Second cousins that I haven't talked to in 30 years or 40 years or 50 years or whatever, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, what if they don't know you? I mean, how can you help them narrow things down if you know, they were...
Well, then you just do the math, help them figure it out, because you know your family tree, hopefully. I mean, otherwise you could say, yeah, I don't really know anything because I, you know, I can't say that because I've got 3,500 people on my tree now. God, I don't even know how that happened.
God's on your family tree?
Huh?
I said God's on your family tree?
Well.
Almost on mine. I'm before, so.
Yeah, you have, you're BC.
We're BC.
No, but I would be able to, you know, look at it and say, well, it's got to be around here somewhere, you know, because we would do the... We would just try to figure it out with the DNA matches on the app and see who we have in common, you know, and if they're, you know, third cousin or closer showing up as that, I could probably help them. Beyond that, it's kind of hard because it gets so far-fetched at some point.
Do you think it's just hiding in plain view from them and they just don't know where to look on some...
I don't know.
I mean, I know if you reach out and you're reaching out to, you know, this cousin or their child and this, and again, nobody answers you back, you know, I guess that would just be, well, frustrating as heck, but I don't know. It's just kind of like, am I going to the right place? Am I in the right place? The DNA doesn't lie. You have to be in the right place.
Well, like we were saying before, get your DNA results up on every one of the platforms that you can. So you end up taking two tests, Ancestry and 23andMe, and then downloading a report and shipping it off to the rest of them that are either free or a small fee, just to get them up there and see if you can figure out who all your shared matches are with, you know, help them by being the shared match. You do it too. So I'm already on those platforms. If somebody came to me, I'd say, okay, you did Ancestry, now do 23andMe. And we're going to take, in the meantime, we're going to take your Ancestry results and we're going to put it to GEDmatch. We're going to throw it over to MyHeritage. We're going to go to FamilyTree DNA, etc. You know, some of the little ones. And see if anything pops up. And then let's see, between me and you, we'll compare who our shared matches are. And then I'll be able to tell you, at least, you know, what side of the family they're on.
And isn't there that method that you run it through?
Yeah, the leads method.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's when you can sort, but it helps to have all of these matches first. Because then you can
explain again. I know we talked about leads before, but explain again what the leads method is.
Yeah, you take your known people. It's harder when it's somebody who's adopted, so you have to kind of establish what side of the family certain matches are from. And if I'm on the same There's a bunch of people related to me. Then I say, you know, we don't need to bother with this one because I already know who these people are. So we need to find your other parent. So let's look for all the people that match with you, you know, and match with each other and try to figure out how to sort them by family branch and color code it. There's lots of videos on this, but it's just a sorting method to try to figure out, you know, where these new DNA matches, where they fall, which branch they're on.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then we had talked a little about reaching out on their behalf. What do you have to present? I mean, to these people, the DNA here, it doesn't lie.
Screenshots of their shared matches with you. It's like, look, we're related. We're both related to John. We're both related to, you know, Mark. We're both related, you know.
And if you have a same cousin that you can match to the mystery cousin, then you're going to see if it's the mom side or the dad side.
Yeah, and they can tell you what their shared DNA is with the same person you're sharing DNA with, because we can't see that on our side. We can't tell how much DNA they share with Mark. You know, I share 200 with Mark. How much do they share with Mark? Oh, 400? And they're younger than me? That sounds like maybe they could be an uncle or a half uncle or something.
Right. And if it's on your mom's side, then you know.
Yeah, and then that leads you in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maternal or the paternal.
Well, clearly, if they have some really high matches, that's what, you know, you can kind of figure out, oh, well, it says, you know, uncle.
So, what if you don't have those matches?
Yeah, like I wouldn't.
Right.
You know, that's where you have to really like try to ask them how much do you share with the same person I share with? You know, like I was just saying. But, you know, and then you can send your proof to the people that you're trying to reach out to on their behalf. Maybe it's a sibling of their parent. And we just don't know which of the siblings in that family it could be. And you know, maybe none of them did their DNA because they were expecting this one day, you know? So you have to say, hey, you know, this person's 30 now. They're not gonna ask for a college education or any back child support or anything. All's good. Do you know of anything that might have happened? Because I have this proof right here that they probably came out of your family somehow. But then again, are you close enough to say anything? Or you could send them to them and say, hey, I already spoke with Linda, and Linda said that she acknowledges me as a second cousin because of our, you know, we have the same background, ethnic background on one side, and we share this much DNA, so that makes us probably second or third cousins or whatever it is. So it would make sense that maybe I should talk to you. But, you know, the rejection possibilities. Ugh. Some people are going to be accepting right away or not at all.
And that's the con part of it, too, is they could just be shutting it down and be ever mad at you for the rest of your life because, you know, you opened up the can of worms. But
who cares?
You know, you did it to yourself, people. And, you know, DNA advancements and DNA doesn't lie. It just don't lie.
It's not like you have to take responsibility for anything at this point. You just can just say, yeah, that was me. Here's my, I laid the card out on the table. It was me.
Yeah. You know, you don't have to pay for their school or their house or anything like that. So.
I guess, you know, maybe it would be bad if they were a public figure. They might, what do you have to lose? What's the big deal?
Nowadays, yeah. Nowadays, that's nothing. So yeah. That's not even a big deal.
No, they did the right thing. And, you know, they made sure that somebody responsible raised them. So
that part of it, you have to look at too. Yeah. It's not a bad thing. They have their reasons. And I know a lot of like family members that had to do this is because of their moms. And it was like the family embarrassment thing or the family, you know, you don't do that, you know, or you weren't married, and being the Catholic people, you know.
Well, nowadays it's not as big a deal. Back in the 50s and 60s and even the 70s, it was still kind of a big deal.
Right. And most of the ones coming forward now too, they really want the medical the medical history to know.
Sure. That's really one of the things that you should just say, okay, yeah.
Huge part of it. A huge, huge part of it.
But it's not as embarrassing or problematic as it was, let's say, in the mid-1800s or so. I've been trying to find my third great-grandmother, three times great-grandmother in Germany. And for the longest time, I thought, oh, she only had one daughter. And, oh, that's sad. She must have participated a lot in her life. And then, you know, I this past week, I found a brother. And then I later found out that he died when he was like maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 months old. I said, oh, that's sad. She had a little brother. And then I went back into the deep, dark German records for Bayern, Germany from the 1800s. And had to look in file by file, just looking for things. And then I found a family book where basically it was kind of like the address book, since they didn't have phones yet, for the town. And you could find the name of the family in there. And there she was with all 14 of her kids.
Oh, 14?
14 that she'd given birth to. And it said on there, all of these children are illegitimate.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. And then I was thinking, like, I slept on it for, you know, a day or so. And I'm like, God, was she a prostitute?
Apparently she did too.
Yeah. She didn't sleep. No. How can you sleep with all those babies? But, you know, half of them survived, half of them didn't. So there was also that. But, yeah. So it's like, I had to think about it. It's like, what was going on here? What were you thinking? What happened to you? Oh my God, you poor thing. And then I was reading, it's like, why? You know, because and they numbered them. OK, because I went back and found every single one of them in the birth records, the baptism records. And the priest from that diocese numbered her illegitimate children. I mean, it wasn't embarrassing enough. Right. You had to number them, like, and then they put, like, when it was born, 14th. You know, but I'm glad she named that one after herself because she deserved it. Junior. And but then I found that what happened was back then, you had to prove to either the county or the town or the country that you could afford to have a family. So what happened was a lot of times a couple would get together, they would live together and they would have a family, but the father was not listed. Hmm. They just, you know, they made the mom, you know, carry that burden and the shame supposedly of having illegitimate children, but every one of them got baptized. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah. In the Catholic Church, which
I'm
is like,
they
what?
Let them.
Yeah. So it's like, how freaking set up for failure business is this? So, you know, and God love the woman. She lived to be 76 back in the day. So,
You know what? For 14 kids,
that's a miracle.
And if some were like stillborn or whatever, I mean, just the whole health part of that. Of having 14 kids.
And just being, you know, the sadness of carrying a child and then losing it at, you know, birth. She had one set of twins, so she was actually pregnant 13 times. If maybe there were more, but they just weren't listed on there. Who knows? But as far as the timing went on the records, it's like, well, from like 20-something to 39, she popped out 14 babies.
Wow.
That's a long... Yeah. But anyway, so it was a thing then, but at the same time, it wasn't because of the law of the financial thing that you had to prove that you could have a family. And that
so they didn't make her put them up for adoption after,
of course,
like China
not.
Does. Like,
no. You know, and, you know, I think a lot of times, too, back then, it's like if you couldn't afford to raise your kids, you would just, like, you know, if they were old enough and strong enough, you would just have them go live with the farmer down the street and they would work on the farm there, and then you wouldn't have to support them, and, you know, they could still come and see you.
Yeah,
you know, but they were like, they did that here in America too, where they would, you would be missing kids, you'd go from census to census. Maybe 1910 they were like two, and then in 1920 you expected to see a 12-year-old and they weren't there. It's like, oh no, they died. But then if you kept looking on the census, you'd find them, like, you know,
down the street,
living with somebody else. But anyway, it's not like that now. And people should really get over it if they are the ones that had the illegitimate issues. It's not the kid, you know, it's not the kid's fault.
Absolutely not. And anybody who's family of that kid, it's not their fault. And you should embrace them. They're a cousin, you know, or a niece or a nephew. And it's cool.
Yeah, and just to be an advocate, and, you know, just be careful, make sure you don't do any more damage than what's already been done to them emotionally. And
yeah,
it's not like it was then, but the church even baptized back in the 1800s. So weird, huh?
It is. I mean, we have three cousins that we've found through the DNA now. And well, two from the DNA and one was brought forward after her grandmother passed away, my great aunt. And it's like, I love them all and we have fun and we've done things together and we see each other at family reunions, and except for the new one that we just recently met. And it's like, it's family. You know, we're always taught it's family. You don't shun family, you know, don't shun them away. So, you know, they didn't do anything wrong and they're delightful.
Mm-hmm. And I really do have a problem with this adoption rule in this country. And I mean, California of all states, to not let a person who was born in this state know where they came from.
It's
and
hard.
That they're protecting the people that made it that way. Come on.
I think, you know, if they don't want to be found, okay. But I think when they're deceased, then it should be back opened up.
I think you should be able to know who you are, period, in this life as much as you can, because it's hard enough. None of us really know who we are. But imagine that. You don't know where you came from at all.
Yeah. Ugh. And you know what? It, like you kind of had mentioned too, everybody, you know, falls on the mom side and shuns the mom and stuff like that and not the dad. And do you think it's harder to find paternal than it is to find maternal?
I think it's easier to find paternal in a way.
Really?
Yeah, because of the Y DNA.
Oh.
Because it does not change. Yeah.
Even with the haplogroup group, though?
The haplogroup is, yeah, exactly that. It's exactly that. For the mtDNA, for the, you know, the women, it's broader and it's not as current. Mm-hmm. But with the yDNA, it's possibly more current. But it's really strange on the spreadsheet that I ran out of 23andMe. I was sorting by haplogroups, and there were quite a few of mine for the mtDNA side, the V haplogroup, and I don't expect them to be close relatives, but I also did a sort for the yDNA, and it's like, oh my goodness, these guys are related to each other somehow, but one's a German background and the others are Norwegian. So something definitely went on. And this is all proving my point of like this other story that I have going on, where somehow my German side and my Norwegian side got together somewhere. And I don't know if it was on a Viking ship somewhere
visiting
ago.
Visiting the house of Johan.
Or if it was in Minnesota or Wisconsin back at the turn of the century. So I don't know. I'm still working on that, but it's very interesting. But
oh,
yeah.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, just the regular... you know, the regular DNA tests that you can get will show you enough, really. Yeah, as long as people test it. That's just it. You have to get them to test. But it's the absence of testers, or testees, I guess. The absence of people being tested on a certain side of the family really does kind of, like, become suspicious. Like, oh, don't get one of those. No, we're not giving those in our holiday stockings. Because we don't want to know any of that. You cannot find me this way.
That's true. That's kind of an easy way to pinpoint somebody that's like so adamant about not getting one.
Well, it's kind of interesting because the one person that we've been discussing sort of on a past show, and, you know, that's related to you, that we're still trying to help out a little bit. It's interesting that there's the absence of first cousins on the father's side.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that could be either because there weren't any, you know?
Well, that's why you have to do, you know, make sure you take the two tests.
Well, the test and the leads group and the leads group, the leads method, you know, and like I built trees and everything for this section of her family, and I don't know if there's really enough people there, and that's why there's only second and third cousins. Maybe they passed away already because it's that age group that may not have ever taken any. because it just wasn't a thing.
But do you think there's at least one? There should be one.
One first cousin.
Yeah, there's got to be at least one.
If there was, then we would have this figured out for that side of it. Yeah. But maybe that's what's going to show up in Ancestry. So that's what
I think.
Yeah, I hope so.
I do too.
Hopefully this time the test took. I mean, has that happened to you before? Anybody you know where they sent the, hey, the test wasn't any good. We couldn't do anything with
it. Yeah, my parents' son they lost his actually. And then they sent a thing saying, oh, well, we never got his thing. I'm like, well, why are you sending us something saying that when you obviously know you didn't get his thing? And then so they sent a new one and he got to do that one. So, but not that it was that it had a leak or something like that, but who, you know what? The post office could have ran it through. The lid wasn't on tight enough. Who knows? But TikTok.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully she got it and sent it off because we made sure it was an expedited test. Yeah, so
she said she did. So we'll see.
Yeah. Oh my God. Crazy. But yeah. So I don't know. The one side of the family is kind of figured out, but it's that paternal thing that we really...
The paternal thing's driving us crazy is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been such a long time. Not everybody's going to remember everything, and not everybody tells you, oh, this is who I'm dating now, and this is...
Plus, there was a half-sibling.
Yeah.
But different on the father's sides, so there's that issue, too.
Yeah. And when the half sibling doesn't respond.
Again.
Yeah, here we are. Not that they would know anything. But they might still be in California.
That's true. That is true. And that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we've covered everything on this topic. Do you have anything else to add? Or are we good? Or
no, I mean, people just should, go with their gut and be careful and be helpful if you can be. Use your best judgment.
Yeah, people, come on. We, again, these people have done nothing wrong. They were just a byproduct of somebody else's whatevers. So be cool, be nice, be helpful and stuff. And that's it for our first show back on our second season. If you guys have any comments and questions or tell us your story, please visit our website, twiceremoved.net. We'd love to hear from you, have you on the show. We always love having guests on the show. We get into some really good conversations. So please reach out to us. And also, too, we are on Patreon now, right?
Yeah,
we're on there. As I call it.
I wonder why. For somebody who does not drink and they're calling it that, it's hilarious.
Yes, come and have a shot with us.
Yeah, we're starting to load up all of season one and all that up there. And
great.
Any other little short videos that we made that are just informational.
So and play.
And also we have a Facebook group.
We do.
Yeah. And you can find the episodes posted there too that are YouTube. And everything's on YouTube and we're on Podbean. And anywhere you get audio podcasts,
you can't escape us.
No, so you can't.
You might as well join us.
That's right.
Come over to Facebook and join the conversation there. Start a conversation. Jump in on a conversation. Tell us we're right. Tell us we're wrong.
Yeah. If you have a question, that's a good place to get us, actually, on Facebook group.
Absolutely.
That's the best place, really, because that pops right into the phone and I could answer probably in, moments.
There you go, people. So thank you. Thank you for still listening and coming back to listen and find us. And if you're just joining us for the first time, go back and listen to our season ones. They're fun and we love doing this. And we hope you guys love listening to it. So till next time, Linda and Gina, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.
The Twice Removed podcast is produced by Linda Anderson and Gina Glass. All opinions expressed are of our own and of our guests. For more information and upcoming guests, please visit our website, twiceremoved.net.